So, perfect questions and perfect answers is the name of a book which covers questions by Bob Cohen, later initiated as Brahmatirtha, and answers by Srila Prabhupada. So, following in that tradition, actually the tradition is as old as time. We find even in the beginning of the creation, we find in the second canto of Bhagavatam, Narada is asking Brahma, what is the essence of his question to Brahma? Can anyone remember? Anyone? Ladies? Ladies, gents? Anyone? Okay, Jagadish. If no one gets the answer, then Jagadish will get it. Ah.
Narada asked, is it you, the only creator, or is there anyone above you?
Is there about? It seems, yes, correct. Say it. It seems to me, according to my pratyaksha, my direct perception, that there's no one superior to you in the universe as you created it. But by anuman, by deduction, I can imagine there is someone greater than you because I see you meditating. And in reply, Brahma gave the shastric, shabda, ultimate solution, that yes, above me, there is Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is based on questions and answers. In the order of the Bhagavatam, it begins with Shaunakata Sutta. But in the chronology of the Bhagavatam, it's Parikshit to Shukadev. And there are so many others within that. Devahuti to Kapila, Prachina Barhi to Narad, Vasudev to Narad. So many. So following in that tradition, we shall take some questions and I will give answers yatha shuta yatha matihi, according to what I have heard and according to my realization.
Your Holiness, I have a question regarding Vaishnava etiquette. How should devotees properly welcome each other? Is it possible to welcome each other with the words Hare Krishna? Can a junior tell the senior Hare Krishna if there is no instructive tone in this welcome? If it is impossible to say Hare Krishna, then how should one greet each other? On your website, you are instructing your disciples not to start a letter to you with the words Hare Krishna. Should this be applied to an oral greeting as well? In Srila Prabhupada's letter, I found an excerpt regarding etiquette in our society. New Vrindavan, July 16th, 1969. Regarding your second question, about greeting karmis. If a karmi is a friend, you should just greet him with Hare Krishna and with folded hands touch your forehead. If this karmi is a senior relative to you, chant Hare Krishna and bow down to him on the ground. That should be the etiquette in our society. How should we correctly understand these instructions of Srila Prabhupada and apply them in the society?
Okay. This is a big topic. It forms the subject of one chapter in my as yet unfinished and unpublished book on Vaishnava etiquette. As with many topics concerning Vaishnava etiquette, there are general guidelines which do not cover all kinds of situations. How we meet and greet upon meeting a devotee after a long time is going to be different to if we see him every day. Or it may be different. At least when I was admitted into this movement, the standard greeting among all Vaishnavas upon seeing them first time in the day was to bow down and offer obeisance. We hadn't learned the, at that time we hadn't learned the Vaishnava pranama, which begins Vancha Kalpa Tarupyascha. And we used Srila Prabhupada's pranam mantra for everything. For bowing down to deities, for bowing down to Vaishnavas. What was the first question again? There's some more details.
Can we greet each other with the Hare Krishna?
Yeah, that's casually, if we're seeing each other every day and we've already met each other, and then again we meet, say, 5 hours later, it may be like that, yeah. Hare Krishna is generic for everything. You could just say Hare Krishna for everything. It's just like Srila Prabhupada, he taught in the beginning, you'll find in one of those small books which were prepared in the 1960s, there's a whole series of them. On the Way to Krishna, Elevation to Krishna Consciousness, Raja Vidya, the King of Knowledge. So in one of those books prepared in the early days, Srila Prabhupada said to offer bhoga by 3 times saying his pranam mantra, 3 times the Namo Mahavadanyaya mantra, and 3 times Namo Brahmanya Devaya mantra. And even sometimes he said you can offer just by saying Hare Krishna. But then later, yeah, phone's off. Later, he asked his devotees to prepare a system of deity worship based on traditional standards, in which there are specific mantras for offering bhoga. With mula mantras for different deities, it becomes more complex. My understanding is that Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to gradually raise standards by instituting Varnashram Dharma, and he wanted to have a class of brahmanas. So brahmanas are expected to be learned in Vedic usages. So you can say Hare Krishna for everything, but more according to the tradition is to use specific mantras for specific situations and specific activities. So what else is there?
So can we say Hare Krishna to senior devotee?
You can do, but it of course saying Hare Krishna is always auspicious. But it's more, yeah, the reason why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said not to put the name, the holy name at the top of a letter, is that it becomes as if you are instructing them to chant the holy names. That's if you only write Hare Krishna. But standard is to, the Bhakti Sthan Sarasvati Thakur would write, Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Jayata. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada used to, he introduced this also. So they're the holy names, but it's offering obeisance to Guru and Gauranga. Though I have seen in other sampradayas, they'll put at the top of a piece of paper or anything, Sri Hari, something like this. Have you seen that in Madhva Sampradaya, when they write something, they'll put at the top, Sri Hari, something like this. For instance, once I was in Sri Rangam, and I was directed to one house to meet one person there. So he wasn't there at his house. His wife was there, and daughter, but I guess she was about 14 years old. The mother didn't speak English, so she asked the daughter to give me directions to meet that Vaishnava. So she wrote it on a piece of paper, it's a piece of notepaper. And at the top she wrote Sri Hari. Just a little note how to go to such and such place, but the habit was there. Very good practice of always remembering Krishna in all activities. However, Bhaktisthan Sarasvati Thakur, he instructed like that. And Srila Prabhupada, you'll find in his books, at the very beginning, the dedication page at the top is written, all glory to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. So it's more appropriate when coming in the presence of a senior Vaishnava to offer respect. Then what else question is there? Is that it covered? Yeah, that quote. Give me that, that's in English.
See, that was in 1969. Srila Prabhupada wrote that letter. He kept everything very simple in the beginning.
He told the devotees, if I was to tell you all the rules and regulations, you would faint. But he gradually wanted to introduce more rules and more standard etiquette. That's not my speculation. That's noted by scholars, both our own devotional scholars and by even academic scholars have noted that Srila Prabhupada had religious gradualism.
Hare Krishna, my obeisances, Maharaj. Is it a mistake when we chant Krishna Bhakti Prada Devi while doing pranam to Tulasi Devi?
Is it wrong to say Krishna Bhakti? No, it's not wrong. To say Krishna is never wrong. But the standard is Vishnu Bhakti. Does anyone here hate the word Vishnu? Is anyone on the level of the gopis that they don't use the word Vishnu, only Krishna? Well, have a look in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam and you'll find the gopis referring to Krishna as Vishnu. So don't be more of a rasik bhakta than the gopis.
Are investments, shares, cryptocurrencies, sinful activities? Is this a violation of regulatory principle? Are there any permissible norms of this activity? If so, can devotees do this?
This is an FAQ, frequently asked question. I gave a whole talk on this in English. You can find it out on my app. Maybe that could be translated and published. In general, I would say no, because so many devotees and non-devotees waste all their money making speculative investments and then lose it all. Or they become enlivened by some pyramid scheme which is set up to cheat you. On the other hand, some people live their whole life and make their living from this. So if you know what you're doing, do it and give 50% of the profit to Krishna. And if you're not sure, don't do it. That's it in essence. It becomes speculative when you don't know what you're doing. There's always some element of speculation in it. But that's the true in every activity. Sahajam karma kaunteya sadosham api natyajet. Krishna says that in every activity there's some kind of fault, but you shouldn't give up activities necessarily because there is some fault. But in risky activities, you really need to know what you're doing. Just like I was talking with a fireman. So you may think, okay, there's a fire, let me go and fight it, I'll be a hero. But you have to take training. There are electrical fires, chemical fires, and what's the other one? Just regular fires. There are hybrid fires. You have to know how to fight them. There's a science to do it. If you try to fight an electrical fire by water, you'll kill yourself. For instance. So if you don't know what you're doing, better not do it. And just as fighting fire might seem to be a fairly straightforward activity, but it isn't. So engaging in stocks and shares and futures and so many other things, there is a science behind it. Do you want to find out that talk I gave on that and get it you could suggest, and then you can translate it and publish it.
Dear Guru Maharaj, in the scriptures, in the lectures of spiritual teachers and senior devotees, links to Hari Bhakti Vilasa are periodically found. I have no opportunity to read this book. They say that it is not necessary. Should it be considered one of the primary sources? Should I get acquainted with this knowledge, and what is your opinion on this issue?
This is an intriguing question. Hari Bhakti Vilasa is a vast work. It's several thousand verses. I don't know exactly how many. It's meant to be the smriti for Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Smriti in the sense of how we live our lives and what we do. The acharyas of all sampradayas, they give a guidebook for their followers, what to do, how to do. All derived from Shastra, because there are many things in Shastra, and acharyas select certain guidelines from Shastra which are suitable for their sampradaya. Madhva, again, when I see Gadadhar Pandit, I'm thinking of Madhvas a lot. Madhvacharya wrote his Sadachar Smriti. Did you translate that? They're often not very big books because most of the Sadachar or general behavior in Vedic culture is the same for everyone, much of it. It goes caste-wise also. For Brahmanas, there are certain things which they follow, and it may be different for other castes. Hari Bhakti Vilas is somewhat unusual in the sense that there are many, many, many rules given. It's almost certain that Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, the compilers of this, didn't follow all these rules themselves, nor did they instruct their disciples to do so, nor have any Gaurīya Vaiṣṇavas followed everything there. Now, that doesn't mean that it's irrelevant. But it appears that Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and, well, Sanatana Goswami actually gave the final version, it seems. So it seems that he was making a compendium for all kinds of Vaishnavas in the Vrindavan area at the time. That is the conclusion given by, I believe his name is Bhrigupada Prabhu, a devotee from Finland, who has done considerable research, finding multiple manuscripts and published a critical translation of Hari Bhakti Vilas, if you know what that means. Do any of you know what that means?
Critical translation.
Well, it's a critical edition, with translation. Critical edition means you find out so many different manuscripts and you show the variant readings, and then you try and establish what the main reading is and what was actually intended, what were scribes' errors, and so many things like that. Yeah, it's comprehensive and comparative. Comprehensive, comparative, and also attempts to establish, as far as possible, what the original intended version was. So do we follow everything in Hari Bhakti Vilas? No. Should we think Hari Bhakti Vilas is of no use or no consequence? That is also wrong. We have to take what our acharyas have selected for us from Hari Bhakti Vilas. That's the answer in brief.
Sometimes I come across to the fact that they say that we are not in ISKCON explaining this by the fact that we are not following the administrative line of Russian management. At the same time, I feel enthusiasm and great inspiration in spiritual life just by deeply studying Srila Prabhupada's books. Is this inspiration a subtle maya? Is it worth to look for the ways to interact with administrative line of Russian ISKCON?
Yeah, I'm in a similar situation. I'm serious. And I think many of my disciples are also. And many, many others also. Try and get along. Don't unnecessarily make trouble. That's it in brief. I think, was it last year I spoke or the year before? I spoke about how if we can't get on with the ISKCON authorities, no use, no need to fight with them. You just find the association you can relate with and chant Hare Krishna at home. Was that
last year?
That's a general guideline.
Kunti asked Krishna to rid her of her affections, of her attachments. How can we ask Krishna about this if, for example, we have unfulfilled debts to our husband, children, parents? Is it true that it's easier to surrender for the one who is fine in everything? So Kunti, a chaste woman with fulfilled debts towards the relatives, etc., asks Krishna to save her from all attachments to this world. How to surrender to Krishna without having given debts to society? Is such surrender possible?
Tyaktva sadharmam charanam buja hare bhajanda pakvo tapatetato yadi yatra kva vad badrama buddha mud shakim kovarta atam. What's the last word? Bhajatam swadharmata. Translation? Anyone? A devotee of the Lord may forsake all duties in order to serve Mukunda and fall down having done so. But still he is not the loser. On the other hand, someone may fulfill all their duties properly, but if they don't serve Mukunda, then everything is useless. So those are two poles. What we're talking about is devotees who have material duties. It's a very good observation that Kunti prayed like that in her old age. Although she never left home, she remained up until the end. In Bhagavatam, it's stated that when Krishna left this world, it's not very clear, it just says that Kunti absorbed her consciousness in Krishna like this. But in Mahabharata, it's stated that when Dhritarashtra and Gandhari left home, that Kunti went with them. And she also, just like Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, she died in fire. But either way, she stayed at home until the end. And if she did leave, as according to Mahabharata, she did still under the protection of Dhritarashtra, not independently. The answer, again, it's these kind of questions, they're general questions which have to be seen in individual cases. Often people renounce when they're not ready to do so. And then they fall down again. So it's better not to do that. We just heard that verse from Narad Muni, if you renounce everything and for the sake of serving Krishna and again fall down, you don't lose anything. But you do make, you can make a wrong impression in society. So there's no one answer to this question. Generally, for women, they stay at home. Or they may accompany their husband as a vanaprastha, leaving home. But they don't accept sannyas. A man may take sannyas. But taking sannyas doesn't mean that, well, one day you just feel, well, I'm fed up and walk out and put on some saffron cloth. It's a very serious commitment to set the highest example. Practically only an ideal grihastha can become an ideal sannyasi. There are exceptions. The Avanti Brahmana we find in the Bhagavatam. He was anything but an ideal grihastha. But he became he came to a higher level than a sannyasi. He was on the Paramahamsa platform. We find in the ancient history there are examples like that. It seems very difficult for people who haven't been raised in the rigid Vedic culture. Practically speaking, in the Western world today, and largely in India also, renunciation people, there's no clear concept of that. People tend to take everything very cheaply. So that didn't really answer the question, did it?
Sometimes the residents of the temple should attend lectures on Srimad Bhagavatam given by very, very young devotees, young and inexperienced. Such classes do not inspire enthusiasm. How is a class Srimad Bhagavatam important in our lives, even if such a neophyte devotee gives it? Can we, the residents of the temple, listen to Srila Prabhupada's lectures or read his books instead of attending such classes?
Srila Prabhupada instructed that only the most advanced devotees should speak in the temple. That should be the general standard. First, one should hear, absorb, internalize, shravan manan nididhyasanam, before he attempts to instruct others. There may be for the eagle at some point, they throw their, what are they called? Eaglets out of the, they throw them out of the nest, they push them out. Egrets, I think they're called. And then they're forced to learn to fly. So at some point, if everyone who's being trained as a brahmana, if they're actually being trained as a brahmana, should start to give lectures. So that's also a consideration. In one case, Srila Prabhupada told a devotee, he said, I'm not satisfied with the classes here. Then Prabhupada said, then you give the classes. That devotee was highly learned.
Guru Maharaj, is it possible to eat buckwheat in Ekadashi? We always knew that it is allowed, but there is a lecture recently where Bhaktivedanta Goswami tells his students that buckwheat is grain.
Well, according to biological analysis, it is a false grain. It doesn't fall within the taxonomy of grains. There's also like that is quinoa is like that. Do you have that here? And there's also, what's the English name for that? Rajgira? What's the English name? Or Amarsant, something like that? Amarsant. In Hindi it's called Rajgira. And then you also have that rice, which is not really rice. So I don't know on what basis Maharaj said that, but it's... according to standard biological classification, It is a false grain, it's not actually a grain. If in doubt, leave it out. I may continue.
Should the devotees participate in modern wars? If we are drafted, what to do? Try to hide or go to fight?
Srila Prabhupada, when he went to America, the American war in Vietnam was going on. And the young people coming to him were all, as well as many other people, were against this war. They didn't like this war. But Srila Prabhupada said that, well, you voted this government, so if the government orders you to go to fight, you should go to fight. Which no one agreed with, actually. No one who came to hear Srila Prabhupada agreed with. But he did arrange for his disciples to legally become exempt from the draft by gaining ministerial status, religious ministerial status. Some devotees fled America at that time, mostly going to Canada or India. Some, when they went for inspection, feigned insanity, which is dangerous because you could be put in an insane asylum. So I'm just telling you about the responses at that time. It's not very prudent of me coming here as a visitor to speak in detail about these kind of things. I know these are pressing questions for you, but if you want me to continue coming here, it's better not to ask me questions like this. Maybe privately, but nothing's private nowadays because people do secret recordings.
What is the fate of a devotee who had been practicing many years but in the end of his life finds himself in the hospital and leaves the body in the conditions where there are neither devotees nor kirtan nor even kantimal on the neck because they remove your kantimal in the hospital? In general, if the conditions are unfavorable for leaving the body, how does this affect the further fate of the devotee?
Well, as far as possible, devotees should try to help someone who's been serving for so many years and not abandon them in the hospital. The general understanding is that Krishna is very kind. If we have sincerely tried to serve him throughout life, he's not just going to forgive. He didn't have a Kantimala on at the time of death, so send him to hell. Krishna's not like that. Krishna won't forget. Nahi kalyana krit. What is that? Nahi kalyana krit kaschid durgatim tata gacchati. One who has performed auspicious activities throughout his life never attains a bad destination. We should do the very best we can to remember Krishna at the time of death. But if circumstantially we don't remember him, then Krishna will not forget us.
Dear Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada used to say that japa is a conversation with Krishna. The conversation implies a dialogue. That is, Krishna somehow answers.
Really, what is the quote where Prabhupada says that chanting japa is talking with Krishna? Could you provide that for context? then I can't say. I'm not familiar with that quote. This, if someone can provide the quote, they can resubmit that question, because we have to know the context. I'm not familiar with that. Generally, I always heard that we're praying to Krishna for service. Talking with Krishna is a very advanced level. So if you can provide a quote of Srila Prabhupada saying that chanting Hare Krishna is talking with Krishna, then I can start to comment on that. Otherwise, I hear so many things quoted, Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that, which I'm not familiar with, and sometimes I doubt if Prabhupada actually said that.
Your Holiness, is it possible to preach to the people who are under the influence of alcohol, to distribute books to them, to preach philosophy to them during Harinam? How will this affect attitude of other people towards the movement? Drunk people can translate their values during Harinam, for example, in the form of bad language.
If you want to preach philosophy to drunkards, it suggests that you yourself haven't recovered from being a drunkard. It's a pretty stupid proposition. If you can sell them a book, all well and good. But even in Russia, at any time, more people are not drunk than drunk, so why not preach to the not drunk? If you can sell them books, very good. Even to the not drunk people, most of the time we just want to give them books. We don't try and convert them on the spot to be pure devotees. As Srila Prabhupada said, you should know for sure there is no better way of preaching than distributing my books.
In Nectar of Instructions, Srila Rupa Goswami instructs us to control our senses, in particular not to overeat and avoid exquisite, opulent food. In the temple where I live some time ago, there was a standard not to eat sweets every day. Sometimes we took sweets only once a week during Sunday feasts. However, we know that Srila Prabhupada fed the devotees up to the neck, offering them feasts where devotees were sumptuously fed with halava and other sweets. We also know that devotional service develops a renunciation that comes automatically. The question is, why should we make endeavors to control our senses if everything comes automatically? And in general, is it a problem if we eat sweets every day?
Then you become a tantric. You have sex as much as possible, and then you'll get fed up of it. That's the idea. Well, that's not tantric. Some tantric school is like that, yeah. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada encouraged devotees in beginning stages to eat. They were on the platform of Annamaya, the first level of consciousness. Later, he stressed that sense control is required. For spiritual advancement, one has to control the senses. So there are different considerations for different people at different stages. Shortly after I was allowed to join this movement, I asked the temple president in London why Srila Prabhupada instituted these huge feasts on Sunday when everyone eats far too much and then they just lie on the floor groaning. And he immediately replied, that if we didn't have these feasts, we'd all bloop. There's a salient comment. We should eat to live so that we can serve Krishna, not live to eat. This eat to live to eat to live, not live to eat, is not even a saying from devotees. It's just a wise saw.
How can a devotee realize in his life the knowledge that Krishna supports all living entities, that regardless of whether we put our endeavors to provide ourselves with everything necessary or not, we still, by the mercy of the Lord, will get food, shelter, clothes, and so on. Without this awareness, it is impossible to completely devote ourselves to the devotional service and practice it with maximum intensity. How to achieve this level if there is no examples of such devotees in our environment?
So you become the good example. Pray to Krishna for strength and become the good example. How to get realization? You hear, chant, pray, serve. Realization will come.
In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.38, in commentary, Srila Prabhupada says that everyone in the creation of God serves Him directly or indirectly. This law of God refers to everyone without exception. So the one who serves Him, the one who serves God indirectly, under the guidance of illusory representative of the Lord, serves Him without love. Those who directly serve the Lord under the guidance of a loving messenger of the Lord, serve Him with love. So serve the Lord with love. Please explain, what does it mean to serve Krishna indirectly?
It's pretty straightforward. That means everyone is under the laws of nature. You cannot avoid acting outside the situation which is set up by material nature. We're all within the laws of nature. In the present human body we have, we can't fly in the sky like the residents of Siddhaloka can. We are bound by the laws which govern our present situation. So in that way, it said that we're serving the Lord in as much as we are bound by His laws. For further understanding, you can see Gita chapter 4, text 11. Where the similar statement is there. Yayata mam prapadyante tangs tathaiva bhajamyaham mamavatmanuvartante manusha sarva partha sarvashaha. Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reciprocate accordingly. Everyone is on my path in all respects.
In one of his lectures, Srila Prabhupada says, if you develop love of God, you will love every living entity. And at the same time, in his books, he emphasizes that the love is meant only for Krishna. So, when we love other living entities, we develop attachment towards them and forget about Krishna. What happened with Maharaja Bharata. So how properly express our love to Krishna and to living entities in such a way so that it will not bound us in material world and will not lead to offenses to the living entities.
Statements have to be understood contextually sometimes. Srila Prabhupada says that love is meant only for Krishna. That is in the context that Krishna should be the central focus of our love. If we love Krishna, we automatically love all living beings. Just like if you love the Father, then that love is complete if you also love all His children. Because you love the Father, then you love the children because they are in relation to Him.
In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.41, in commentary, Srila Prabhupada says that there is no gain, however, in accepting the message of Bhagavatam from the unbelievers, atheists, and professional reciters who make a trade of Bhagavatam for the layman. It was delivered to Srila Shukadeva Goswami, and he had nothing to do with Bhagavata business. He did not have to maintain family expenses by such trade. Srimad Bhagavatam should therefore be received from the representative of Shukadeva Goswami, who must be in the renounced order of life without family encumbrance. So do I properly understand that we should not listen to Srimad Bhagavatam from devotee who is in Grihastha Ashram, and that we should prefer to listen to the one who is in a renounced order of life? Or it means that we should not listen to the person who have a selfish interest regardless of in what status of life he is in.
Yeah, the second understanding is correct.
In Bhagavad Gita 2.4, in commentary, Srila Prabhupada says that respectable superiors like Bhishma, the grandfather, and Dronacharya, the teacher, are always worshipable. Even if they attack, they should not be counterattacked. It is general etiquette that superiors are not to be offered even a verbal fight. Even if they are sometimes harsh in behavior, they should not be harshly treated. How we should properly understand this and implement this instruction in our life? In what situation this instruction we may not follow?
It's too general a question. I can just say generally we can follow this, but every situation is different. We can remember that ultimately Krishna, well, the whole Bhagavad Gita was Krishna convincing Arjuna to fight, going against the general etiquette. Every situation has its own nuances. So we can say, in general, worshipable superiors should not be offered even a verbal fight. The whole of Mahabharata is full of innumerable what is called dharma sankat, or situations in which if you do something, you're wrong, and if you do something else, you're wrong. Arjuna protested that if I fight against my worshipable superiors, that will be wrong. But then, if he didn't fight, he would be wrong for abandoning his duty as a kshatriya. So how to solve such situations? Every individual case is different. Use your common sense. And if you don't have any, ask someone who has. course, common sense is often wrong also, so it should be on the basis of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra.
If four sampradayas coming from devotees of Lord Shri Krishna, why their philosophies are different?
Well, their philosophies aren't different. The same basic point is there, that Vishnu, Krishna is supreme and we are his servants. There are some detailed points, some nuances which are different, but the basic point is the same. Difference is because everyone has Krishna, because Krishna is multifaceted and can be seen in various ways. But the basic point that he is supreme and we are all subordinate to him, and we should all surrender to him, that is accepted by all the Vaishnava sampradayas. That's one in English? Who's written in English? Our friends from India. Okay, so they get excused from not writing in Russian. So read it in English and then translate it in Russian.
If one thinks about Krishna at the time of death, one achieves the abode of Krishna. What about the ones who only know that Krishna is God, but have very little knowledge about Krishna compared to the senior devotees? When would they think at the time of death to achieve the abode of Krishna? What would they think of the time of death, at the time of death, of to achieve the abode of Krishna?
Ultimately, it's up to Krishna. The general principle is the one who thinks of Krishna at the time of death attains to Krishna. In Srila Prabhupada's translation, he says, one who thinks of me only at the time of death. In the Sanskrit, we have antakale cha mam eva, emphasizing. Mam eva smaran. So if one's consciousness is not fully focused on Krishna, then you won't get the same result as one whose is. What is the verse after that? Then Yang Vapi Smaram Bhavam, and then there's one verse in a different meter. What is that? Look at it. Yeah, then after that. Let's look it up. Sarvakala, What are we looking at? I'm looking for this. Kavim Purana, it comes a few verses later. Kavim Puranam Anushashitaram Manorani Angshamanusmaradyaha Savasyadhatarma Chintya Rupam Aditya Varanang Tamasaparastat. So in his translation, Srila Prabhupada writes that one should think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead without deviation. Yeah. In the verse before that, Abhyasa Yoga Yuktena Chaitasa Nanyagamina Paramam Purusham Divyam Yati Partanu Chintya. So the emphasis is on remembering Krishna, fully focused. Purusham Paramam Divyam, recognizing him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But ultimately it's up to Krishna. All right, we'll finish there for now. Okay, go on, finish the question.
If a father teaches to his child about ancient Vedic civilization...
About what?
Ancient Vedic civilization from a very young age, Then the child goes to school and learns about evolution. He will have some conflict in the mind. How this conflict can be solved?
Not necessarily. When Srila Prabhupada heard from his British teachers that reincarnation and karma cannot be true because there's no witness to the previous activities, Srila Prabhupada didn't accept what he was told. Because he was strong enough in his understanding that there is Paramatma as witness. But it's better not to send children to the schools which Srila Prabhupada describes as slaughterhouses. It's the end of the question? All right, that's the end of the session. Thank you very much. Vanchā kalpa tarubhyascha kṛpā sindhubhyo eva ca patitānām pāvanebhyo vaiṣṇavebhyo namo namaha.